there are a lot of good hearts out there, and they haven't yet found the outlet of how they can express that in a way that really feels meaningful and connects with who they are as a person. But the universe does not let a good heart go to waste. So have confidence that your good heart will be put to good use.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. And since this is the beginning of a new season, if this is your first time listening, I wanted to introduce myself a little bit. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark. I have 5 kids. I really like quoting 80s movies. If you quote them back to me, we'll be best friends forever. I want my $2. I talk about nachos a lot, the correct way to assemble them, the different kinds of styles that you can have, each component of it. I can get really into that. I have really excellent taste in music, no matter what my kids say. They have great taste in music, but it's because they learned it from their mother. I'm also a widow, which is very sad, but I talk about it all the time. A believing Christian. I'm an actor, a comedian, a host of The Lisa Show. I like to do lots of different things, and I'm pretty open about all these different aspects of my life because I don't really think that we're any one thing, right? And I really love having these conversations on The Lisa Show. It's really important to me. But before we go on, I wanted to give a really huge thank you to everyone who's taken the time to leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I know it seems like a small thing, but it really does help the show get out to more people and to show up in more places. And it really makes an impact on what I'm able to talk about and who I'm able to talk to. So if you haven't found us on YouTube yet, too, you definitely should check that out. We've been filming, yes, with video cameras and everything. The Council of Moms, and all of those episodes are now up on YouTube. And plus, there's a bunch of other little bonus things, a lot of silly fun videos, you know, the same kind of things that we do on Instagram. Plus, we're always doing giveaways, and sometimes we need your help to find stories and to find people with those interesting conversations and stories that we want to get out there. So please follow. We're all over the social medias, and we really do read every message. Welcome to the first episode of Doing Good Better, our series on how to actually make a difference in the world. And just in case you're already cringing because trying to make a difference anywhere seems like a very big ask and you're already overwhelmed, welcome to the club. I know so many good people who are racked with guilt because they feel like they should be doing more in their families, in their communities, just more. And I want to say right out of the gate that in this episode, when we use the word guilt, we're not talking about the kind of guilt that comes after you've messed up and you really need to make amends. We're going to be talking about a specific kind of guilt, that vague, haunting feeling that everyone needs you. And if you're not everywhere at the same time, you're not a good person. That kind of guilt is paralyzing. And it can make a conversation about changing the world uncomfortable or even painful, because who wants to talk about all the good things they're not doing and worry they don't have extra bandwidth for? Bear with me. And tell me if you've ever had this experience. You've just finished grocery shopping, you're on your way out of the parking lot, and you see someone with a cardboard sign asking for help. What do you do? Do you stop? Or do you think, I'm really in a rush right now. Maybe I'll stop next time. Or maybe you think, I could give them a couple dollars, but would it actually make their situation better? Or maybe you think, I just rounded up to the nearest dollar to donate to a charity in the checkout aisle, and I can't possibly give every single time someone asks me for money. Whether you give or don't give, you're probably familiar with the guilt that comes up in this situation. And even if you think you've made the quote-unquote right choice, it rarely feels like enough. And you might find yourself trying to forget the whole thing until the next time you're leaving the store parking lot and the whole cycle begins again. So for right now, just know that I'm not going to ask you to do anything except keep listening. Because I've been able to meet some amazing people for this series, and it's given me hope that things really can get better and that I can be involved in making things better, not acting out of shame, guilt, or fear, but out of hope. I've been speaking to a lot of experts on helping, on change, on social impact, and we have an antidote for this paralyzing guilt. Not just that, but you're going to hear from people in this episode who don't feel that guilt at all, and you're going to hear why that is. Because it is possible to have a relationship with giving back that doesn't leave you in a place of shame, avoiding eye contact with people who ask for your help. And dismantling that guilt is what we're starting with in this series. So let's dig into it. Let me tell you about my guilt. There's a relatively new word for that thing when you read lots of negative news online. They call it doom scrolling. And according to health officials, it's pretty bad for you. And it increases your anxiety, sadness, and overall just tanks your mental health. And I like to think that I'm not a doom scroller. I don't spend most of my time seeking out the negative in the world around me. But these days, you don't really have to seek it out. If you read the news at all, it's a never-ending wash of conflict, natural disasters, health problems, crime, suffering. It just goes on and on. And there are a lot of people who need help, and I want to help. I don't want to be a bystander to all these things. But I'm just one person, and I know my influence is limited. And what if I accidentally make things worse? I definitely don't want to make things worse, but what if I'm a terrible person for not trying? I'm a terrible person, aren't I? I'm awful, and the world is horrible, and it's just getting worse. And what kind of world are my kids going to raise their kids in? And it's all because of people like me who say it's not our fault, but it is our fault. And I'm part of the problem because I'm not part of the solution. You get the idea, right? And maybe it doesn't surprise you to learn that this train of thought doesn't particularly inspire me to help, even though that's what I'm stressed about. And it doesn't benefit anyone on the other side of these issues either. It's a no-win, paralyzing spiral. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk to people who love giving back and look forward to it and are not paralyzed by this guilt. But before we move on from the news, I want to point out that human beings have an innate built-in bias towards bad news. It comes from our survival instincts, which draw our focus toward potential danger or threats because being able to take those seriously is good for staying alive, great for bear attacks. Unfortunately, this negativity bias can also blow things way out of proportion. And in a modern setting, when everyone has a doom scrolling device right in their pocket, that can make it feel like the world really is doomed and that nothing you do can make any meaningful difference. That just isn't true, not in the real world. And it's important to know that because negative news isn't going away. It has its purpose. It's just not the whole picture. In the real world, there is hope, and finding it is the first step in getting unparalyzed, shedding the guilt, and really making a difference. Let me give you an example. About 45 minutes from our studio is a vocational school in Salt Lake City called The Other Side Academy, or TOSA, T-O-S-A for short. The school is free and completely self-sufficient, funded through a moving company and thrift stores, which are run by the students themselves. They live together, they are each other's temporary family, and they consistently beat unbelievable odds.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
TOSA was kind enough to take me behind the scenes on site at their facility.
Let's start where we all start, and that's at the bench right over here.
This bench is the first thing you see when you walk into the Other Side Academy, right next to the door.
And being this the portal, the one thing that we don't do is we don't talk about our old life. Anything that happens before the bench, we leave it behind us. So we'll have gun runners, drug dealers, gangsters, Walmart thieves, and gutter junkies all in the academy. We have 130 students, but nobody knows the wiser. And so there's no politics, there's no anybody thinking they're better than anybody else because none of us speaks about our life before the bench.
The Other Side Academy, or TOSA, is an alternative to long-term incarceration. The average student at TOSA has been to jail 26 times. But by the time they leave the program after 2.5 years, 71% of TOSA graduates are drug-free, crime-free, and employed today. For those who choose to stay another year, that number climbs to 82%. If that statistic doesn't surprise you, it should. According to the Bureau of Justice, 3 years is usually all the time it takes for 68% of released prisoners to be arrested again, and 83% will be arrested only a few years after that. The vast majority of people who face prison charges in the U.S. will not successfully and happily reintegrate into society. But at the Other Side Academy, the vast majority do. And not only that, Everyone I spoke to at the Academy radiated enthusiasm about giving back to other people. In fact, all of the staff running the program are former students who stayed to pay it forward. Working for TOSA requires them to live on site and is anything but easy. They are dedicated full-time to helping others change their lives. Joel Haddock is one of these people, a master's student at TOSA with a hefty leadership role.
I'm pretty busy most days. You know, I get up in the morning and the conversations start. I'm one of the first people on the floor. I'm one of the last people off the floor. I was given an opportunity to be a freshman crew boss. That's one of the guys who helps some of these guys, the early candidates, find their way and help them navigate some of the smaller things in the beginning of the process. And you know, being involved with the tribe like I do, I'm constantly doing something, but that's what I signed up for. You know, I've been an influence, whether it be for good or bad, you know, and, you know, for so many years, I influenced so many people to do bad. And there's so many negative tolls that I've taken on someone's life. So today I get to balance the scales and make that right through doing positive and influencing for the good, right? So like the balancing of the scales too. That's another reason why I stayed. As long as I have, you know, it's like there's part of me that finds fulfillment in that gets to feel right at the end of the day because I've gone and I've helped someone else, and you know that's very time consuming, but yeah. That's all right.
That's okay.
That's what we signed up for.
Joel's whole life right now, as you heard, is dedicated to supporting others and helping them succeed in building a new life. And the joy that he gets from that now is part of what drew him to the program. He saw it in other people first.
You know, when I came to the academy, it was under 9 suspended sentences. I was up for a lengthy incarceration. I had completely destroyed my life, living the same cycle of addiction and criminal activity. And I'd known someone who was one of the first women graduates for the Other Side Academy, you know, and she had obviously changed and she's living a happy, fulfilled life. And she had written me a letter my second day in jail telling me that I needed to go to the Other Side Academy, you know, and I thought for that moment, I'm like, wow, I could have something different.
For Joel, the journey to giving back started with a flicker of hope, which grew as he took the first steps.
I saw people that looked like they were from the same lifestyle that I was, but they also had that bright glimmer of light in their eyes, and they were happy, they were engaged, they were communicating, they were running the facility. There was just a number of things that led me to believe that there was hope and there was something to be had.
And looking back, Joel knows that both he and the friend who introduced him to TOSA are exceptions to the rule. They're on the other side of the statistics.
Statistically, she should have been dead or incarcerated, and I should have been dead or incarcerated. Some of the people who run this organization, like mathematically, we don't exist. It's just kind of like a miracle.
Statistically, Joel doesn't exist and is a miracle. And it makes me wonder what other incredible stories we don't hear, stories of success, of people like Joel who have turned their lives around despite all the odds and are continuing to make the world better. Between the numbers and doom scroll headlines, there are people. And some of them have found hope in the most unlikely places. And like we saw in Joel's story, that hope is contagious. Also, side note, there is more to the story, and it is worth a listen. We'll be uploading the interview to YouTube so you can hear it. And in the meantime, there are 2 more people that I want you to meet. And one of those is Clay, a fellow student at the Other Side Academy who, like Joel, is now a leader supporting others through the same life-changing process, something he could have never imagined even 10 years ago.
I was in and out of jail probably about 30 times for a bunch of different things, you know, drugs and guns and possession, theft, burglary, all sorts of stuff. And I couldn't quite get it right. I tried programs in jail. I tried outpatient programs. I tried inpatient programs, 30, 60, 90 day programs. And I just couldn't figure it out. And when we talk about hope, I had lost all hope in that moment, thinking that, you know, here I am about to go to this 2-year program, but I don't know if there's any hope for me. You know, it was kind of a lost cause.
By the time Clay walked into the doors of the Other Side Academy, his hope was gone.
2009 was a really rough year for me in my life. My parents divorced after about 25 years. I got 2 DUIs in a month, and then I found 2 of my friends dead from heroin overdoses. And at the time, I thought that would be like the catalyst for change and to get my life together and the eye-opening experience, but I used that as kind of fuel to be a victim. And for the next 10 years, I spiraled out of control.
This description of spiraling downward, wishing you could change but feeling totally incapable of doing so, really stuck with me. Instead of being motivation, the pain and shame and guilt led Clay to feel like a victim, keeping him from actually making any changes. And since we've been talking about guilt already, I think it's worth looking a little closer at this, because who hasn't fallen into the trap of perfectionism or toxic self-criticism? I think most people do this subconsciously, but we all do it, based on the faulty notion that if you just make yourself feel bad enough about your bad behavior or the consequences, then you'll start to change. When in reality, it doesn't work like that. Shame and guilt don't produce lasting change. They do produce spirals. And Clay was spiraling for years until it started to feel like maybe change wasn't even possible and there wasn't any hope. Even in the first year at the Other Side Academy, he struggled to feel that anything he was doing was going to make a difference in his own life. And then it all changed.
By this time, I got my first taste of being able to help other people, because that's where I was at the Other Side Academy. And so once I started helping people and being able to just help them see things differently and just relating because of all of my previous struggles in that first year, man, that was like the catapult for me. I got addicted to change. I got addicted to helping other people, and it was the best decision I've ever been able to make for myself. I felt like I looked in the mirror and I finally felt like I was, you know, that I liked what was looking back. Yeah. And starting to have integrity. I was starting to have boundaries. I was starting to be honest, which was all foreign to me, but it felt good at the same time. And then, you know, getting to help other people here at the Other Side Academy, that's my new drug. That's what I get high on today, is helping others.
Did you catch that? Clay's description of helping others being a high is such a contrast to feelings of guilt, paralysis, shame, or victimhood. Clay doesn't stay at the Other Side Academy because of any of the feelings that used to drive him. Instead, it's hope. He loves what he does, and he has hope for the people he helps. I think this journey illustrates so well that shame is the opposite of empowered action. For people wanting to do good in the world, it's critical to get that out of the way, because guilt and shame are paralyzing. Hope and love, on the other hand, are motivational. They make you want to act, and that's what drives people like Clay to be a powerhouse for good, guilt-free. Here's what his new life looks like.
First and foremost, I'm an example. So I'm going to conduct myself and I'm going to move in a way that inspires others to move in that direction, right? A lot of times it's not what you say, it's what you do. And that's what people follow. But, you know, change at the Other Side Academy comes in many different forms. It comes in one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. So they could talk about what they're struggling with. I could give them feedback. And you know, sometimes it comes in a way of a haircut, where if they're acting out and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, it can get a little loud. It can get a little brash. And it's, you know, in our eyes, tough love. We're not going to tell you the truth, because truth heals and secrets kill. That's the motto at the Other Side Academy, right? We have group settings too, where you're getting called on your behavior in a group setting. You have talks with staff members. All our beliefs that we try to instill into people, it's not just some literature that we hang on the wall for people to read. It's actually who we want you to become. And for me, those beliefs is everything that I do on a daily basis. Learn how to tell the truth, hold myself accountable, hold people accountable around me, having boundaries, being faith friendly, right? Respecting the faith of other people, you know, working hard. You alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. I wake up and I come to work with a smile on my face, and I love what I do. There's still people in my corner that call me on my crap every day, and I love it. So every day I'm practicing all of those beliefs, and that's what we're just trying to teach people how to do.
I love hearing about Clay and Joel's work at the Other Side Academy, because it's so clear that they have hope, both for themselves and the people around them. Rather than looking away from people who need a lot of support, they've devoted their lives to helping others turn their lives around. And you heard Clay describe the personal payoff of helping others in such an involved way. Instead of dread, he gets a high. There's more than one way to make this kind of mindset transformation. And to help us move from a place of dread or guilt to a place of hope and being energized about making a difference, let me introduce you to Aaron Miller, a teaching professor at Brigham Young University. He's very familiar with this kind of attitude that Clay and Joel have, the attitude of leaning in rather than looking away. And his full time is helping others to find and act on that hope.
My name is Aaron Miller, and I teach at BYU. I'm what's called a teaching professor. And the classes I teach are all related to social impact, nonprofit management, or business ethics. I do some research, and it typically relates to those things as well. I also work in the Ballard Center for Social Impact, which is here at BYU, and it's the largest social impact center at any university in the world.
Along with Aaron's work at the Ballard Center, he also hosts a podcast called How to Help, which I highly recommend you check out. We'll put a link in the show notes. Like Clay and Joel, Aaron exemplifies the attitude of leaning in and devoting his life to making the world better. And you're about to hear a key phrase that he and the Ballard Center use to describe this attitude.
One of our mantras is love the problem. And what we mean by that is don't love your solution. People sort of get excited about the whiz-bang idea that they think is this cool invention that's going to change the world. And instead, they should be just falling in love with the problem, understanding it intimately, you know, developing deep expertise around it.
Falling in love with the problem. That's what Aaron does. That's what Clay and Joel have done. And it's something we'll continue to talk about throughout this series. How exactly you do that? Because it's so vital to anyone who wants to make a difference. Aaron explained what that looks like.
It starts with your heart being pulled toward the needs for this group of people, but then you fall in love with the problem and you're always problem solving. You're always thinking like, okay, this isn't working. What do we do next? And solutions come, but they very rarely look like what you thought they would at the beginning. And the benefit of loving the problem is you're less easily discouraged if your first or second or third or 10th attempt to improve the problem fails, which it inevitably does. And so this attitude of like, I'm here to learn, I'm here to get a deep understanding of the problem helps you endure, it helps you survive setbacks, it helps you stick with it because it's the problem you're in love with, not just some solution that you came up with.
I find this metaphor, falling in love with the social problem you want to solve, really interesting. When you're overwhelmed by guilt, you lean away from the problem, avert your eyes, try not to think about it. When you're in love with the problem, you lean towards it, ask people about it, do your research, spend time thinking about it. Your role in solving the problem becomes exciting rather than intimidating. And rather than assuming you know everything about the problem already and know exactly how to solve it, you take the time to deeply understand it. As Aaron and I talked about loving the problem, another topic that kept coming up was creativity. Now, something you should know about me is that I love to talk about creativity, so it made me really happy that Aaron brought it up. Aaron explained that thinking about a problem in a new way is all part of loving the problem. The creative process is the creative act of loving. And even when social issues seem hopeless, creativity can unlock hope in unexpected places. Here is one example Aaron shared with me.
I met a woman about a year ago in South Africa, outside of Cape Town, who noticed that, so there are some large textile factories, and these were factories that are producing the kind of cotton that you'd find like in a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And because of how the textile is produced, there are these ends of the fabric that they can't use because it's what the machinery grips onto while it's going through the process. And so they're thin strips of cotton, basically, that are not more than an inch wide. And these were getting thrown away. I mean, headed to the landfill, essentially. And she had the really creative idea of turning those into a product. And they're all women who are the artisans who work with this company. And they produce things like bath mats and other products out of these scraps from the t-shirt making business. And she has a few dozen artisans that work for her. She has a contract with one of the largest retailers in South Africa now, and they're selling bath mats around the country. And South Africa is starting to sell them internationally now. And, you know, whatever idea she had initially isn't what she ended up with, but it was loving the problem. I want to keep these t-shirt scraps out of the landfill. I want to help these women who need more income. And let's solve that problem.
How can we solve that problem?
It's just this sort of like creative problem solving, not loving the solution. I think the tragedy is most people don't think of themselves as creative, or they're thinking about creativity in the wrong way.
Most people don't think of themselves as creative, or they're thinking about creativity in the wrong way. You might be thinking, Lisa, you really ought to do a whole series all about that. Well, we did. You're welcome. So if you're interested in hearing more about non-conventional creativity, go listen to our creativity series where we talk about this a lot more. And if you know exactly what I'm talking about because you were listening back then, you win. Shoot me a message. I'll send you a sticker. I might even write you a poem. Who knows? I could create anything. Anyway, I love how creativity is turning up as an integral part of making the world better. It takes a willingness to think outside the box in order to find hope in a doom scroll saturated world. That's what happened to me when I didn't have any hope. I had to find it in creative ways. To fall in love with the problem and stick with it through the ups and downs, and to find new solutions. Maybe my favorite thing about the falling in love metaphor is that love is rich, rewarding, and feels deeply worthwhile. Love itself isn't always easy, but falling in love is effortless. And the more I talk to people who are actively engaged in improving their communities and the world around them, I can see this love and light in their eyes. It's real. It's pulling them forward. And it's nothing like that paralysis or guilt that those of us on the outside feel before falling in love with a problem. If you're in that space at all, feeling the guilt and shame and self-punishment, why haven't I done more? If you find yourself averting your eyes or feeling uncomfortable when confronted with people who need help, I'm here to tell you that those feelings will disappear as you lean in. You have every reason to feel hope, and you're not alone. In the episodes ahead, we're going to dive deep into how you love a problem, how you apply your creativity to find solutions that really work, how to know which causes make the most of your time and resources, how to avoid burnout, and so much more. Actually, next episode, you're going to hear Aaron Miller explain how one ordinary person with no medical degree and probably not even a name you've heard of before fell in love with a problem and saved over 1.5 million lives. That's what we're starting with this next episode. But I'd like to finish today with this final thought from Aaron.
It's easy to get discouraged, and so maybe I could leave with like a word of encouragement.
Oh, I'd love that.
I tell my students this all the time, you know, whether you call it God or the universe or whatever. And for me, it's God. I believe deeply that God doesn't let a good heart go to waste. There are a lot of good hearts out there, and they haven't yet found the outlet of how they can express that in a way that really feels meaningful and connects with who they are as a person. There's certainly taking some steps into the dark and trying out things and failing and learning as you go. But a good heart is too precious to be squandered. And so have confidence that your good heart will be put to good use.
From the messages that you send me and the conversations that we have in person, I know that you have a good heart. The Lisa Show community is full of people that I really personally feel so honored to know and rub shoulders with. And I truly believe that if you're listening to this right now, hey, especially if you made it to the end of this episode, if you care that much, you do have a good heart. And I'm so grateful to you for joining us for this series, which personally means a lot to me. By the end of this season, my hope is that together, we'll feel empowered and confident in the ability we have to do good, real good. Thanks for coming along. Stay tuned. Consider this your crash course in changing the world.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. Special shout out to Avery Stoneley, who created this series and also produced this episode, along with Becca Hurley, with help from Blake Morse, Kenny Mears, McKay Menden, and Michael Combs, with music and post-production by Josh Fouts. For more information about The Other Side Academy, check out their website at theothersideacademy.com or follow them at The Other Side Academy. Those links will also be up on our show notes. Aaron Miller is the Associate Managing Director of the Ballard Center for Social Impact. You can learn more about their work at marriott.byu.edu/Ballard or on Instagram at BYU Ballard Center. Aaron Miller's podcast, How to Help, is available wherever you find podcasts, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes as well. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including the Council of Moms filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thank you for listening.